I'm Emily Thede, author of The Last Fenestra, coming in 2022 from Wednesday Books.
And I'm Anna, a teacher and a writer in the query trenches.
You're listening to Basic Pitches, where we...
Two basic pitches...
break down the basics of writing and being a writer.
Great start. There it is. What if that's the opening of this episode? No, I can't let that be the opening of this episode. Are you kidding?
Hey, Emily.
Hey, Anna.
That's the opening. There. And hey, EJ.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for being on here. This is exciting. As always, it's exciting. I love just talking to, like, all these different guests. And I think everybody deserves to know that every time we have a guest on this podcast, I always look at their background and I'm like, oh, I love you. This room is so fantastic. So I'm grateful for all the rooms I get to see and all the people I get to
see. Have you seen the, like, the Rate Your Room Twitter account that just, like...
No.
Oh, it just screenshots, like, people that are, like, on, you know, on the news or whatever. It just screenshots their thing. And then it's, like, it'll be, like, points for, like, the, you know, high-quality paint color, but, like, could use more decoration or whatever. Because I have a couple of, like, local friends that are medical professionals that have been interviewed a bunch of times, like, with COVID. And I did, there was one time where... I know this couple, and the husband was on, like, CNN or something, because he actually now works for Obama's, like, COVID team. And they were in a hotel, and they got rated by the, like, rate their room. And his wife was like, no, that's not our house. Like, we have a room, a beautiful room for him to do interviews in. Like, come back when he's in that room. And I thought, like, oh, man, if you're waiting to get your room rated, and then, like, you finally got rated, and it was when you were not in your house, that'd be a bummer.
I'm looking for this on Twitter right now, and if I can't find it, I'm calling you a liar.
It's a real thing. It's a real thing. I just saw it the other day. I'll find it, and I'll send it to you. But yeah.
Okay. I'm looking for it, and I can't find
it. It's cool, because you can sneak a peek into all kinds of celebrities' rooms just by scrolling their feed, and you would love that.
That's like my dream.
That's pretty great. Yeah, the Zoom era has opened all sorts of new doors.
It has. Right. It gets right. A little weird, though, because I'm very aware of people's backgrounds and very aware of my own background, and it's just, like, the things you never used to have to worry about.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of my clients in my day job have gotten very savvy about the green screen backgrounds.
Oh.
Ooh. And then, like, every once in a while, you'll see, like, a glitch of a dog walking in the background or a person. It's so great.
I love it.
It looks so polished and put together, and then there's just, like, the tail of a cat.
Yeah. I know someone who's...
my minimalist apartment.
I know someone who's, like, an actual millionaire, and I've never been to his house, and we've been on a couple of Zooms together, and he'll have this, like, beautiful library in the background, and I'm like, wow, like, your house is even fancier than I thought. And he's like, no, this is, like, your XYZ, like, famous library in Prague or something. And I'm like, oh, sorry.
Didn't you know?
Oh, sorry.
I was like, I was really excited to come visit your beautiful library, but never mind.
Yeah.
I'm just like an uncultured swine. I don't know better.
I want, like, the Schitt's Creek mansion as my background.
Yeah.
Like, can
like,
you?
Like, surely you can. Fine. Surely someone has this, right?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yes.
Oh, possibilities.
Isn't that a thing in Zoom?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's in Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
I've used Zoom all of one time.
What?
Wow.
Yeah, I've used for school. Our school is Google Meets, especially for education. There is a big thing across. I think maybe across the. I don't know if it's North Carolina as a whole, but they said no to Zoom because of the lack of security.
Oh.
And just like, no, especially, I even think the campus, the college nearby also said, like, don't hold your stuff on Zoom. Like, do it on Google Meets because it's way more secure, apparently.
They have changed their security settings a few times this year because of all of that. And every single time, it's like a disaster because we have all these meetings set up already because my entire life happens on Zoom now.
Yeah.
And then, you put it on there, like a lot of the recurring ones especially, like on the old settings, and then all of a sudden they're like, what's your PIN? And like, there's no PIN for this meeting.
Yeah.
And like, your client's trying to get on and your boss is trying to get on and there's no PIN.
Oh my gosh.
Just imagine, technology. What are we going to do in the future when someone's like, hey, can we schedule a meeting for Tuesday and we're going to have this moment where we're like, oh wait, do you mean like a meet with humans in a room? Like, you know what I mean? Like, now when someone says
that
meeting, I assume it's online.
Yeah. That happens with education all the time where they're like, we're going to host a meeting between all the English teachers. And it's you kind of go, okay,
what are you saying here? Yeah.
We don't know what to do. Nobody knows what to do. It's awkward. Anyway, what's not awkward is, look at that segue, segueing all over the place. What's not awkward is this conversation that we're about to have with EJ. So EJ, can you tell us a little bit about what you write? You got a couple books out, right?
I do. So I've got a fantasy series out with City Owl Press. So it's about, it's kind of mythology inspired, kind of, I call it more like mood than anything else. It's kind of dark, but it starts with a golem who desperately wants a soul, but he's kind of been trapped by this whole thing with his maker. And so he goes on a quest to the underworld to steal back his soul in a deal. This is not the best I've ever summarized this as it happened.
That's okay, because at the end of the episodes, we like to ask for bad pitches. So you can just count this if you want to. And then you can flip it and do the best pitch at the end. And we'll just mix it up a little.
I'm warming up.
But it still sounds great to me.
So he ends up, he makes this deal with an angel, breaks into the underworld, steals back his soul, and it kind of starts this whole thing in motion for war between the realms. And nice. So it goes out from there. And yeah, so three books in the series plus a prequel novella. You can get the prequel novella for free on my website if you join my newsletter. And this is actually the first I've gotten to share this news other than like just on my own on Twitter. But I just found out the release date for my next novel.
Yay!
So I've got a young adult dystopian novel coming out in August. It's August 10th.
Cool. Very cool. So, congratulations.
Yeah, we're now, thank you, now in the crunch time for that to do the final revision and prepare for the launch and all those things that you do.
Very cool.
That's
does it have
amazing.
A title?
That's exciting.
It does. It's called Departures, which very cool. Emily, you have seen at least a piece of this.
I have seen Pitch Wars.
So,
very cool. Congratulations. Oh, that's so exciting.
It took a few years.
I think I just saw that. I was looking at your website and I just saw the cover for it. Is that the actual cover?
Is that a placeholder for a cover, courtesy of Canva.
It's still fantastic. Yeah, nice. Oh, sorry. Did you make that? Shut up.
No. Canva made that and I changed a couple of the colors and then put my own title on it.
By the way, if we're talking about
tools for authors and platforming, Canva is amazing.
Canva is amazing.
Stuff like that, and you can pretend you know what you're doing with graphics. So, yeah.
Right.
Very cool.
I'm writing this down so I don't. August, let's say it again so everybody can get in on this excitement. It's August 10th,
August
right?
August 10th.
Nice.
Yay. That's so soon.
Look, I know.
I'm sorry, should I not have said that? Are you doing okay?
I made the mistake of counting backwards how many weeks that is yesterday.
Oh no.
So it's soon. Yeah.
Yeah. That's intense.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Well, I will say of my Pitch Wars inbox this year, I think there's a couple that are already on their way to being published, which is just really exciting. Oh, I love it. It's very
cool. That is so cool. Yeah. Pitch Wars is great.
Yeah, but it's just a good reminder to people because, you know, I know when people apply to Pitch Wars and they get all stressed out whether they get picked or not. And I always tell people, like, it's not – it literally is not a rejection. It's just, like, you got to pick one and you can only pick one. And so I love when I can be like, hey, look, I got to work with one mentee, but, like, all these other people are doing really amazing things. And, like, they didn't need me, but it was still cool to, like, get a glimpse into it early. Like, it's just – I don't know. It's fun. Makes me really happy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think it's good it's always a good reminder to share those stories because there's so many different avenues to publication.
Yes.
There's so many different winding paths before you get to there. And just like, yeah, I mean, this one took about 3 years between like querying and then I got an agent and then we went on sub and then we parted ways and then I queried again and then I submitted to Small Press and went through a pitch war. Yeah, all the different things that happened. And it's just like, you know, it doesn't mean you're not going to get there.
Yeah.
Just keep working on it. Write the next thing.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. It's so true. And, you know, we all know, too, that when it comes to publishing, you know, I think especially when you're a new writer, it's so easy to start thinking that, like, it's like a yes, no, good, bad, like all that. But it's not. Like, publishing, everything's about timing. It's where the market is. It's what readers are looking for. I mean, you know, even with just like vampires, they were out, then they were in, they're out, they're in. It's just – and so I think I just often wish I could just kind of like just hug all the writers out there and be like, even if like today isn't the day, you like tomorrow could be the day that the thing you're writing that you think like – isn't right for the market suddenly is exactly what the market needs. And yeah, it's just, it's so exciting. It's fun.
Absolutely. Yep.
It's very true. This is nice to hear as I am currently querying.
It's true, and it's true.
It's very nice to hear. We'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
It's been, like, I pull back from our episode with KL. Like, I have very much stuck to not calling them rejections, calling them passes.
It's true.
Because it encompasses everything. Like, it's not right for right now, or it's not right for my tastes. Yeah. It doesn't mean it's bad.
Well, I always think, like, imagine if you walk into a bookstore and you buy a book. Imagine if all those authors were watching, like all the authors of all the books in the bookstore were watching you walk to the bookstore. I don't think that they would be like, oh, that person just rejected my book. They just not bought my book. You know, they would just be like, oh, a person came into a bookstore and they bought that book, not my book. But you know what I mean? But like we get in this mindset of like, but like you would never think that way in the real world. Like you would never, if someone went into a restaurant and ordered one meal and like the other meal was the one the chef was really proud of that day, the chef's not going to be like, they rejected my beautiful meal. They're going to be like, they ordered a different meal. It's just, yeah, it's a headspace. It's a hard one to hold on to, but.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I don't know, are you guys familiar with Ray Bradbury's whole approach to the rejections? I love this about Ray Bradbury. He's my freaking hero. But, you know, he just considered this all like a numbers game, right?
Yeah.
So you write something, you put it out there, you write the next thing, you put it out there, and things will get picked up or they won't. And so what he used to do back, because this was, of course, back before everything was digital, he would take his like physical paper rejection slips and use them to like paper his entire office.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so like his goal was always to cover his entire office. So there was like a goal to like collecting the rejections themselves, not out of spite or anything, but just because that's how you get things published is you put things out there enough that you collect enough rejections and then you just play out the numbers game and someone picks you up.
Totally. Yeah.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gotta keep going.
I wish I could get myself there.
Yeah.
I hear that and I'm like, hell yeah. And then inside my heart, I'm like, but it hurt. Yeah.
I feel like it'd be more fun when they were mailed, you know? Because then you're like opening a letter and you're like, stick it to the wall. Whereas like the thought of being like going into your query inbox and being like, print, glue, it's just like, it's not quite as satisfying, I don't think.
Right. Yeah. Like, do I want to pay that much for printing your paper myself just to put my rejections all around me physically? Right.
There's just a process of like.
It's like you can't even provide the ink.
Yeah. If you already have to open the envelope, it's like, all right, you thumbtack it to a wall. But yeah, just being like, print, walk over to the printer, pick it up. Like, nah, don't do that to yourself.
It's true. Like, I don't even hardly use a printer anymore. So it's like, it's really so out of the way. That's really funny. I also think of like college letters when they came back and like you're opening it up and like you either get in or you don't and like those rejection letters.
Like how fat was the envelope? How heavy was it? That was a big thing.
Right. Kids and these days. You're just like, you're left with this like physical manifestation of your rejection and you're just like, oh.
And nowadays, what? Do they even have to log on? I'm so out of date. I don't even know if people have to log on to like the specific college or if there's like a date. Like do you log in and see all your rejections and acceptances? I don't even know.
That would be awful.
I should ask a teenager.
I can just tell you. Because, like, do they work together?
Right.
I don't know, because I've heard that some college applications, like, they have, like, the standard application. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can fill out the application, and then there might be certain questions that are targeted. So I don't know if there's, like, a query manager for colleges.
Yeah, it's because it's, like, submittable. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that does make sense.
Do you imagine just, like, checking off the schools you want? Like, bloop, 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 send.
My God.
Yeah. Teenagers, weigh in. We don't know.
I love it.
I don't know where we were going with this, but this is fun.
I've been thinking quietly of how to segue here and
author platforming, because EJ has a book coming out. And
is clumsiness a part of your author? No, that's not it.
I guess I didn't really.
But anyway, we are here to talk about author metro platforming.
Right? Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah, that,
getting on a
platform. That's it.
Yeah,
that's it.
Nailed it.
So I know. No, I know, Emily, you have a book coming out.
Yeah.
I know nothing of this. I'm just querying. The only platforming that I have is, you know, trying not to look ridiculous on my own little Twitter and then also knowing what to do with our podcast Twitter. So can you, like, share?
And I don't know anything yet. I'm just getting to the phase where my book is leaving my editor. So I'm like, what happens now? What am I supposed to be doing? I mean, so, yeah, please tell us.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just want to be trying to make connections with readers, right? You want to start getting people interested, make some connections. So, I mean, I always say, you know, start with some owned components. So podcast is an awesome way to do that. Way to go. But yeah, I mean, start your, you know, get your website, claim your URL with your author name, start a newsletter. I've been hot on newsletters recently. I've been doing a few presentations.
Talk me into it, because I'm just like, oh, that just sounds like a constant to-do list that's never taken care of. So, yes.
Oh, but you know. Okay, so look, you can do this however you want, right? It's yours.
True.
But the thing about a newsletter is that unlike Twitter, unlike Facebook being the worst example, I think, because of how they keep changing their algorithms to make it harder to reach people.
Oh, yeah.
If they're following you.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like your newsletter, your website, these are things that are completely yours. So no one can change the rules on you. No one can disappear followers who they've decided are bought. You know, mm-hmm. they're yours. You can take that list anywhere you go. So like I've changed my author platform a few times. That list goes with me anywhere. It's mine. It's not MailChimp's. It's not ConvertKit's. So that's one advantage to that and one reason to do it. But also like even after all these years, email is still the best way to make connections with your biggest fans. So if someone invites you into their inbox, you know they're excited for you. Like, this is not a passing thing. This is not an impulse. This is someone who wants to know what you're up to. And so as a result of that, one, it's really good to nurture that because you can build that relationship over time with your touch points. One thing I like to talk about, kind of coming from my professional life, I do a lot of public relations and content marketing stuff, is there's this general principle from marketing called the 7 touch points. So the idea is to make a sale, you have to have these repeat, classically at 7 over time because of content bubbles and everything else. You know, there's so much out there now. It's more.
Yeah.
But you need to have those repeat touch points with someone in order to convert them into an actual buyer. So you hear people talk about like, well, I've been tweeting all week and my Amazon ranking hasn't changed. It's like, look, that's not how this is going to go.
Yeah.
Especially if every tweet is like a sales pitch.
Yeah.
No one's going to go for that. That's not how this is going to work. Well, just focus on building those relationships, right? So Twitter can be one touch point. Your newsletter can be a touch point. And especially if you're putting it out on a regular basis and people are opening your emails and they're engaging with you, that's a really great way to build a loyal following of readers. So I really am a big fan of the newsletter. And you're right. Like if you set it up so that you're doing it weekly, yeah, that's a big to-do list. You don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You know, you can do it monthly. You can even do it quarterly if you want to. But having some sort of predictable rotation will help build that trust and expectation with readers so that they kind of like know when it's coming. They're mm-hmm. excited for it. They look forward to it and all of that. And then you can also control what the hell you put in it. So it doesn't have to be a huge, like, you don't have to write like a thought piece. It doesn't have to be a huge essay every time mm-hmm. you put out a newsletter. You can just, you know, like I put in mine like a mood gif. I put mm-hmm. what I'm reading right now. So I'll throw the covers in there and then a few lines about what I'm thinking about it. For my free list, I'll do like a curation of my top links from the previous month. So I just kind of literally go through my Twitter feed, click on anything I've been sharing, and then I'm like, oh yeah, that's worth passing on again. And like, cause you know, it's a different audience, it's a different context. Yeah. And so there's ways to do it that you can control how much effort you have to put into it,
but I
it
like also that. Gives I you like the sound of that.
Yeah. You can make it whatever you want it to be, but make it yourself, make it useful or interesting, make it reflective of your, you know, authentic author presence.
Yeah.
And you'll make those connections. So yeah, that's when I hit really hard.
Yeah. Cause I could see myself, like if I did it too frequently, I'm the kind of person that, you know, writers, we love writing, but we're always looking for something to do that's not writing. And so I have a tendency, if I put too many things like that on my to-do list, I could just see myself being like, oh, yeah, no, I just have to do my newsletter first. And then, like, the writing would never happen. But if I did it infrequently, that wouldn't get away with that so much. So, yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, it kind of comes down to how you work, too. Like, I do different types of work at different times of day. So in mm-hmm. the morning, I try to keep that time for, like, my fiction writing. Then I go to work, I do my day. And then in the evening, because my brain is a little bit more tapped out,
mm-hmm.
that's when I do things like my newsletter because it's a different type of mental energy for me. And so that helps me kind of know you're supposed to be writing fiction right now. I cheat on that sometimes if things are crunchy.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you kind of, another thing about newsletters is you hit that rhythm. And when you find one that works for you, you can then kind of set your workflow. So it becomes more of like a rotation or a habit, or maybe you just block out hours on the day before, you know, whatever you need to do. And then it's one time for that quarter and you're done until the next.
That makes sense.
I really, really like the concept of it's something that you control.
Yeah.
Right? Like it is something that you own, you do, you know, like you're going to have control of how the flow of this happens or how this gets out to people. I think that's really fantastically smart. And I don't know. I just think that's really like, I don't know. I'm really sitting with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, geez, this is your platform. Do it the way that works for you. Right.
Yeah.
But do something. Do something to get out there and start building a readership. You know, even if you're at the query stage, Anna, like it takes so much time to build up a newsletter or a Twitter following, whatever else, you know, set up your presence. If nothing else, like claim your name. Like your URL, your handles.
As someone who, I'm sure they're a lovely human being, but there is a young person with my name who has claimed all of the handles.
I have my website, and it's just like, I just have the name, and I had a website for a while, but I think I went through that thing, and I even posted a couple months ago about like, should a querying writer have a website? And the overwhelming answer was yes, and... I went through that whole thing of like, I don't know what to put there, but I like the idea of the newsletter is more about like, here are the things, like here are some resources that I found. Cause that's what I'm all about, is like sharing resources. Cause I very much take the approach of like, I'm happy with where I am, but I am in no position to tell people what to do. So it's like, here's something I found helpful, right? This is the thing that I like blew my mind, like really listen to this episode or whatever. I like that concept. Like that's really giving me something to chew on.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, there's a few different ways to think about that. So one is that, you know, as you just said, there's value in curation because there is much out there these days. Like the internet is just a deluge.
Yeah.
So if people are exploring, you know, what you're about or know you and trust you and are looking like, oh, here's a list of resources that help them. That's valuable. There's so many people who just don't even know where to start. So I'm all for that. And then also, you know, I love to think about, you know, what else, what are you excited about? And then where does that overlap with what your target readership is going to be excited about? So like, where do those overlap? And there's also nothing wrong with like a little bit of personal sharing. It makes people feel like they have that relationship with you.
Yeah.
And it also, again, is something you can control. You know, you don't have to give the entire world, you know, pictures of your children, but, or like tell them where you're going on vacation next week, and, like, when your flight's taken, all that sort of stuff should not be public. But like having like some people are runners and like to share, you know, how their runs went or what they're, you know, there's different ways to share just like that one little piece of yourself that can really get people excited. Think about what you like to hear from your favorite authors.
Yeah, that's so smart.
Yeah.
It's super cool. Like V.E. Schwab is always sharing like where she is in the world and like she
has
these like pictures of herself and like her bookshelf is behind her. And even just like what's on V.E. Schwab's bookshelf is like such a cool thing for me.
Totally.
I love to follow something like that. And so, you know, people get excited for those little things if you're willing to share them. But again, you can totally decide what those things are.
Yeah, that's really smart. I think the recommendations thing is smart too. Because I think in my head, I always thought, well, if I start a newsletter, like, what would I talk about? Just like writing advice? But because that's only targeted towards writers. And ideally, I would want readers. And not all readers are writers, obviously. So that's really smart. But yeah, but I love screaming about other people's books. So go for it.
Right. Yeah.
And it sounds like something like I'm just thinking like brainstorming for myself because my brain is so – I mean, we talked about it at the beginning, right, where I'm like, hi, I look like I'm not present and I'm a ghost of my former self. Sorry. But like I like the idea of whenever I feel like that, having a note, like a note on my phone that I'm like, oh, this resource is really cool. I should share this with my newsletter next month and then just put the link.
Yeah.
And that's all I have to
do. That's so smart.
And then I can come back and visit. That's really cool.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways to use research. And yeah, that's an awesome idea.
Brilliant.
I'm really bad at doing research. I like half-ass it. I make up as much as I can and then fill in the blanks.
Well, I'm always that person that has like, you know, 18,000 tabs open on my computer because I'm like, this article was interesting. I should tell so-and-so about it. And I never actually get around to like recommending people read stuff. So newsletter would be a great way for me to be like, all right, Emily, copy it, paste it, and then close the tab already because it's saved for posterity in this, you know, newsletter.
Totally. And then once you kind of get your flow with it, it's so easy because you just create a copy of it, like most, and then you just fill in your new content.
Yeah.
And like I've got like my Canva templates. We were talking about Canva earlier. And so you just like update whatever your books are, like whatever it is. You just, you kind of get your flow, you get your systems in place, and then you just update it.
Very cool. Brilliant. Sorry, you just changed my life.
Wonderful.
Because I will say that is the one aspect of pre-publication that I was like just full on dread. I was like, I don't want to. Do I have to do this? I don't want to do it. But now it could be fun.
No, make it something that's going to be fun for you. Absolutely. And then, yeah, another thing that I tell people, I've been doing some presentations on this recently. You know, if you're not sure what to put in, just start spying on the other authors that you like.
Yeah.
You maybe have a good platform. I sign up for like every author newsletter I find. And I'm just like, what are they doing?
Uh-huh.
What are they doing? And so I'll just like stay on for a few cycles and then a lot of them kind of accumulate because I start to get really into them. But, you know, you can always unsubscribe again, but just kind of take a peek around, see what you get excited to read, and then think about how you can make it your own. So you're not just copying anybody, but kind of put your spin on it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, isn't that writing in a nutshell, right? Like you got to take in a lot of content so you know just like to get – it's like collecting pieces and then you build stuff out of it.
Right.
How would you meet?
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. It's true, though.
Yeah.
Like,
it's so true. Yeah. I mean, I often have to remind myself of that when I'm going through like an inspiration drought, you know, is that it usually means that I need to absorb other people's kind of creativity and creative energy. Again, like you said, not to copy it, but just because if I put a whole bunch of good books into my head, then I'm like, you're fertilizing that flower pot and just there's something that can grow there, which is. You know, we all get to that point where writing feels like you are just dragging words out of yourself, and that's where I am right now. It's always a good reminder. Yes. Consume other people's cool stuff.
Yes. Input for output.
Yes.
How exactly. I like to think of it, you know, like, yeah, because you do that, and especially if you are platforming hard and you're writing a lot and all of that, you know, you're putting so much out.
Mm-hmm.
You have to feed it. Like, I use this to justify, well, one, it's a good way to remind myself to get some rest.
Yeah.
But I also use it to justify, you know, maybe if I am going to binge watch a Netflix show or something because it's all story, right? So this is okay.
I do that all the time. Yes.
Yes.
I have to feed myself a story.
Well, you never know where inspiration is going to come from, too. I mean, I've had inspiration come from things that there are times where I think, oh, well, I should be consuming this type of media or this genre or whatever because that's what I'm trying to work on, and then I'll kind of cheat and go watch something or read something completely different, and then that's the thing that kicks off an idea, and it's like, okay, you can't know where you're going to find inspiration until you find it. So
it's so true.
Yeah.
And you know, I think there's something to be said for paying attention to what gets you excited.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's like, I mean, my debut is very much my because I wrote it after a few frustrating years of querying, and I, you know, I felt like I was doing everything right. I was trying to write the book that I thought the market wanted, and then I just was frustrated and exhausted, and I was like, whatever, I'm writing this book, and I tried really hard to, you know, I was like fantasy, and everyone likes dark fantasy, and I had this idea that was sort of this dark idea, and so I started with this dark idea, and then it's like, I'm 75 pages in, and I'm like, why is it all rom-com banter in the middle of this book about a girl who keeps killing people? And I was like, I was telling Anna earlier, I was like, I had the hardest time because I was like, how do I create this author persona that what is what I thought a fantasy author was supposed to be? And I was like, but the book keeps kind of having this humor and this sort of this lightness to it, even though it's this dark concept. And then I had this light bulb moment where I was like, oh, that is my author brand because that is me. And this book that I was writing where I was taking like my favorite elements of rom-coms and my favorite elements of dark fantasy and my favorite elements of like 90s disaster movies, you know, like the collections of misfits that banter and bicker. And I squished all the things I loved into one book. And it wasn't until I finally realized like that is my brand and that is my book and that they actually weren't. I was trying to figure out how to make myself something and make my book something at the same time. And then it was like, oh, actually just let them both be yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And I found my joy. And next year, hopefully other people will find joy in it. Scary.
And I think that's where that, like, author platform, that author brand or whatever, like, that can help you and help your readers too.
Totally.
You were talking, Emily, about how do I explain to people, like, this is a dark fantasy-ish, but with rom-com. Yes. Like, you know, it's that merger of things. And I think if you have, like, that newsletter or your Twitter feed is constantly being like, I'm not just retweeting and talking about dark fantasy. There's also rom-coms in here. Red, white, and, you know, red, white,
royal,
and
blue.
Royal blue, which I can never say that title ever. I always trip over it.
I'm dying to get to that one.
Oh, it is so good. It's so good. I highly recommend listening to the audiobook, especially because it's just, it's laugh out loud funny, and also you might cry in public. Yeah. It's like, oh, but it's the best. Yeah. All the feelings.
Okay. That's that won't be the first time I've cried from a book on the Metro.
Yes. My editor edited that book as well, and it sums her up perfectly. But she actually, my editor just described on Twitter today, described my book as a dark fantasy hugging a rom-com. And I was like, I love it.
Aww. I love that.
It's a rom-com in the embrace of dark magic.
What if that is just your author brand? Like, that's it. I was like, I and you like make that's... that on your Twitter banner. And
perfect. I love it.
Oh, I wish I was artistic.
For real, I can go in your newsletter. If you, like, share, like, Emily's rom-com of the month or whatever, people will know. They'll get that and go, okay, when I pick up her book, I'm not going to expect, like, horror, dark fantasy where everything dies.
Just
going to be a little light. Yeah.
Now I'm picturing, like, I'm not artistic at all, but I'm picturing someone, like, trying to, like, capture this in, you know, an image. Like, you almost have this, like, Grim Reaper, like, a dark type, just, like, hugging this, like, cheerful, like, bright colored something. That's my brand right there.
It's got a little princess dress on, like, a little A-line skirt, and she's like...
Making, like, a little flirty wink at the audience.
Love it. Oh, it sounds great.
If anyone who's listening can draw, please, please, please draw me a visual representation of my author brand. It would make me so happy.
Dark fantasy.
Dark fantasy hugging a rom-com. Yes, please.
I love it. I also want to talk about it a little bit because, EJ, you have your own podcast.
Yes. Right? Yes.
You co-host a podcast?
Yes, yes. Yeah, so I do that with Emma C. Wells, and God, I just love her.
She's great.
We met each other. We debuted the same year from City Owl Press. And so we, like, go back. We've only met in person ever, like, once, but she's one of my author, like, BFFs.
More than Anna and I can claim.
Right? Hey. It's so funny how this stuff happens these days. It is. We just, you know, our first books released kind of at the same time. And we were at the same... what's it called? It was one of those romance events, but now it doesn't happen anymore. It was like a
big... Oh, yeah. Was it like RWA or something?
Yeah. Yay. Yeah, it was RWA. Hey. And it was like our first author event, both of us, and we were just like, what is happening to me? And like, I just remember our booze at the vendor thing where people were going through shopping for books were like across from each other. And so we just kind of like bonded. And you're like, you know how like... You just, like, you have people who are your people.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
We just jived and kept in touch. Yeah. And here we are. Yeah. I guess we've been doing this for over a year now.
I think that sounds about right.
Wow.
Anna and I both know her through Pitch Wars. So we were all the same Pitch Wars class. So
Yeah. And we call it Fantasy Girls. And it's just a very tongue in cheek, over the top type of. This is just what we are, okay. Mm-hmm. And we talk a lot about science fiction and fantasy and just whatever we like across, you know, books and TV and film and whatever other mediums. We just released one talking about girl gangs in science fiction and fantasy.
Nice.
So, yeah, we had a lot of fun with that, kind of talking through our favorites, what really makes one. We had some debate over, you know, who we would pick for our girl gang among some science fiction and fantasy characters.
Oh, I thought you were going to say authors for a minute.
I was be like, that would be awesome too, though.
Who's going to be on your team?
Oh, man. Can you imagine?
Yeah. There's some good options.
That would be fun.
Right?
Based on what kinds of like stuff they create.
Oh, man.
We should do a draft.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Oh my, I was just thinking it's like the fantasy draft for writing.
I'm picturing like if you're dropped into a fantasy adventure, like which authors would you drag in there with you and hope that your writing skills translate to survival?
Oh my God.
I'm like fighting the urge to be like, I'm going to destroy both of you and look at my shelf and already start planning.
Probably would.
Like, what's wrong with me?
I think, Anna, you probably have more adult fantasy on your shelf than I do. So, yeah, you might be a little more fight a little me. More vicious. Yeah.
I do. Hmm. I'm, like, aggressive about this. Right.
You're bringing in all the real dark magic. I'm over here with my rom-commy magic. Doomed. Oh, no.
Yeah. This is fantastic. I'm listening to this podcast episode. Absolutely.
We have fun. We entertain ourselves.
Yeah, that's great.
Right? That's all I can really say. Yeah.
Very cool.
Which, I like, just to tie back to author brand, I think that's something that Emily and I are, like, very... Like, it's very important to us, and Emily, stop me if I'm wrong, but it's very important to us, and it's very important to me to when we're doing this podcast, that it's like what you – let's go back to, you know, teaching WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get. Like, this is what we're doing.
I really wanted to say something sarcastic. Like, what, Anna? This isn't the real me, but I couldn't pull it off.
This isn't it. No, Anna. What is wrong with you? No.
I do not care if what you see is what you get. No, I do.
Emily's like, this is absolutely not my presence in reality. That dark Thank Emily. You.
Yeah.
Well, again, it loops back to that. Like, I think so many people hear author brand, hear author platform, and think that you're supposed to be kind of creating a persona. And the big light bulb moment for me was, no, it's taking who you are and distilling it down in a way that is, you know, easy to – it's almost like – figuring out a way to how to make yourself high concept. You know, we talk about like books, making them high concept. Yeah, like a lot of books, if you just describe the basic premise of the book, they could all sound similar, you know, especially in fantasy. Like obviously there are some similar tropes, if you describe a book like, well, you know, there's a bunch of characters who have to get together to defeat a big evil. Okay, well, that describes like 90,000 fantasy books. But if you say, okay, it's about, you know, a hobbit who has to pair up with a whatever. So it's like, how do you figure out that like short description that is unique to that book or to yourself. So yeah, you're not trying to present your whole self in all of your complexities. It's just kind of figuring out like what are the things that kind of are like your tagline, your personal tagline. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just in even just like making yourself recognizable from one platform to the next so that if someone finds you on Twitter, they don't have to wonder if they have also found you on Facebook or this is different. Yeah, just like using the same headshot, making it professional, using like a color scheme, which again, Canva has some really great tools for that that I'm a huge fan of.
But
I'm being lazy and I'm waiting for my cover. I don't like, I'm not a visual artist person. So I've very much been saying like my website, everything I'm like, I'm just going to wait and see what the brilliant cover designers at Wednesday come up with. And then I'll probably just steal some of those colors and make those my colors.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, we'll see.
I love it. I do like the idea of, because when you first, I think when you first start get started in the writing community, you see some of these big personas and you're like, oh, like, I'll just take it like, we'll just go big. Leigh Bardugo, right? All like, when she presents herself, it is like as this goth, like, witch queen. And you're like, everything about her is so elegant and so, like, dainty and pretty and put together and clean. And then if you, like, you know, if you follow her long enough, she's not that way all the time. Like, she starts doing this. Like, she started doing the things of, like, shooting herself, like, taking pictures or taking video of her getting ready. And somebody – she has, like, a makeup artist who's actually helping her. And it's like, okay, thank you. And, or she shows up on, like, the Shadow and Bone set in her, like, sweatpants and sweatshirt. And you're like, oh, she's a real teenager.
Right.
But, like, when you first start, it's overwhelming because, for me, I was like, I am not elegant. Visually, my house is not visually stunning.
Some authors are so good at having, like, you know, like they use the same filter for everything on Instagram. And I'm always like, I admire how much it looks. But then I realized in my head that, like, if I meet them in person and the world isn't in that color scheme, I would almost be thrown off for a minute. You know what I mean? Where I'd be like, you're out in bright sunlight when everything on Instagram is like dark and shadowy. I tried to come up with my own filter. I couldn't do it. I gave up. Sorry, what you see is what you get, folks.
I always feel like I'm supposed to be using the filters on Instagram, and then I go through like 10 of them, and I'm just like, no.
Yeah.
I still just am going with my picture.
Yep.
I feel like I'm missing something, but.
I do filters for like anything that's not my physical self. If it's my physical self, then it's like, well, what you see is what you're going to get, because I'm not about bamboozling people. There's a pimple right here, my friends. There's like a there's a wrinkle going on.
I love that I say that, though, and then I just took all their photos, and I definitely – there was a makeup artist, and I definitely told her. I was like, I know some people – oh, so someone was like, oh, this makeup artist, she's so great. She makes you look like yourself but better. And so I flat out told her. I was like, feel free to make me not look like myself. Just like, make me look as good as you can make me look. It's okay. Like, I don't, I'm not going for subtle and natural. I'm going for make me look fantastic. Thank you very much. But I haven't got pictures yet, so we'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
Right.
Hit and refresh on my email inbox constantly.
I tried to explain it to Steven because I was telling him about your author photos, about how, like, you're doing both, and then, like, there's a difference, like a change of clothes.
Yeah, I was doing author photos combined with family photos. And yeah.
Right. And he was like, I don't – and I was like, think about this. I was like, Steven, you've been with me enough on these, like, author trips where we go to, like, Y'all Fest or whatever. Yeah. And I was like, let us picture – you know, Libba Bray shows up with her bad bitch ring. Do you think she wears that ring every day? And he's like, sometimes. And I was like, but all day, all day? Does she look like that all day? Does Leigh Bardugo look like that all every day? And he's like, oh, okay, I get it.
My 8-year-old even said, I was like, she was like, what, there's a makeup person? I said, yeah. And she goes, but then you're going to look like writer mommy and not real mommy. And I was like, honey, regardless, it's a photo shoot. I'm not going to look like, you know, sweatpants mommy. I was like, I'll still look like, you're still going to recognize me, but I'm going to look slightly better than I do on your average Saturday morning. Yes, that is the goal regardless. So yes, world, if I look decent, my kids are confused is the take-home point there.
Oh my gosh.
So do you have any big plans for when your next book comes out? How do you celebrate when books come out?
Oh yeah.
See, that's the hard thing, right? Because the book deal process is so slow. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like you get notice that someone wants to publish you and then you have to take your 2 weeks and do your professional due diligence and let everyone else know and let it play out, and then you sign. You're like, do I celebrate when I get the offer or when I have the it's nothing's changed, but I've signed it now, or when I have the date.
Right.
And so, yeah, like it's one of those gradual things where like it almost just doesn't even feel real. It's just happening. You're like, okay.
I've heard that. Yeah, I've heard authors say.
But yeah, I celebrated when I signed because then it's official. I tell my family, like, I didn't even like tell my family when I was surveying and researching and everything. Mm-hmm. Told them after. But yeah, we took some champagne up to the roof.
Nice.
Enjoyed ourselves a little bit. Yay. So yeah, so that's how I celebrate.
Yeah, because I've heard authors say that like the actual day that your book is out can be almost disappointing just because it's so hyped up in your head and then nothing's actually happening. It's just, you know it's out there in the world and people are reading it, but that it's not, you know, it's not like a birthday party. So I've just heard people say like it's nice to like plan something, even if it's just a lunch with friends, just so you have something that you feel like you're doing something. And I that kind of hit me hard because I was like, yeah, like in my mind it's like next year, like my book is coming out, but like what does that look like in an actual day in the life of an author? And the answer is not necessarily anything. You know, you get up and you do the same things you usually do. You just know that it's out there in the world. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you. Yeah. And there's so much hustle between when you know your timeline and when it actually comes out that by the time it comes out, you're just like ready.
Exhausted.
I mean, at least for me, like I'm just done. Like I'm ready to tap out and just like lay in my bed for 10 hours. but yeah, like you do so much ahead of time. And then the day of, I mean, like I post the shit out of it all day and I refresh Amazon 20 times.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's about it. And so yeah, like having something to do is a great idea because otherwise you're just going to be like obsessing over it with nothing to really channel it to.
And then everyone's like, don't read reviews. And like, if you get tagged in reviews, don't look at them. So it's like, okay. So you go on the internet to be like, my book's out. Nobody talk to me. being like, I hope you like it. Don't tell me if you don't. Like hiding from my computer. Yeah. I'm just heading into like up until now, I've very much been in the process of just like the editorial part, you know, with my working with my editor. It's just the two of us. And then in the past few weeks when suddenly it's been talk of things like covers and dates and all that stuff is happening. And it does start to feel like, you know, you're sitting at the station and then suddenly the train is like going whoosh right down those tracks. So I can only imagine that the final months leading up to it are going to be wild. But we'll see. It's all new to me.
Yeah. When my first book came out, speaking of ADHD and the clumsiness, mm-hmm. like I didn't feel stressed, but I knew that I was stressed because I kept like walking into tables and walls and like I had so many bruises from it. Like my head was in so many different places. It was like just like not processing it even.
I should put those little pool noodles on the corners of all my tables. Things.
You know...
You know, because I always bump my hips on tables. That's my thing. Yeah, like, you know, they have like little bumpers when you have like a toddler. I'll just put them on all my furniture because I can see myself just running.
Someone should rebrand all of that as ADHD proofing. They should. And they'll make a fortune.
Oh, that would be so great.
My first million. Yeah.
Are you clumsy? Would you like some subtle, mature looking bumpers for your furniture? I like it.
We'll make them stylish. We'll make them cute.
Yeah, totally. Honestly. Sure. This could be a Shark Tank thing. Look, there are lots of clumsy people out there. I feel like we're onto something here.
The ADHD market is millions. Yeah.
We see all you clumsy people with bruises all over your legs and hips. We feel your pain.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That and like a master wall with a button to track absolutely everything.
Yeah.
I need trackers in my... Like, I've... like. Literally, our unit is like 800 square feet. I have lost my coffee mug in the morning. I've not been able to find it.
Three credit cards this year. And I didn't leave the house for like 10 months. Right? How does one lose a credit card without leaving their home? I don't know.
Friends, look,
I feel that.
Conversations like this. Yeah. Like every time Emily talks about it, I've never been like officially diagnosed. And I don't want to be one of those people who's like, that sounds like me. But like every time Emily speaks or this conversation right now, I'm like, mm-hmm. You can ask. I always am like, what's this bruise? Oh, I bumped into the coffee table. Yep. Or like, me and doorways are a thing. Yes. And it's usually because I'm thinking about a million.
I turn a little too soon or a little too late.
Losing things. Like, I cannot tell you how many times my husband has been like, you just had that in your hand. What happened? And I'm like, I thought of a TV show I was watching, and then I also thought about how I have to do this thing later tonight. And okay.
So yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, all right. You know, to get on my other soapbox for a minute, women are significantly underdiagnosed for ADHD.
Yeah. I also think writers are probably underdiagnosed, only because I think the writer brain often goes along well with it. I mean, if you think about it, if you're someone who spent your childhood with your head in the clouds, daydreaming about stories instead of paying attention in class, okay, well, that could just be because you're a creative person, but it's also the same. So it's like,
being a teacher, that's something that I paid attention to is the underdiagnoses of,
I got really good at catching it when I was a teacher. Like, it was like day one of the class, and I was like, oh, bless you, sweet child, I feel you down to my soul. I got really good at I would just daydream through the entire school day, and then I would like learn everything myself in an hour when I would get home at the end of the day. Like, it's just
right, like you just like figure it out.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Like, teach yourself later, because like the information was like given out too slowly for my brain. So I was like, I'll just do something else, and then just check back in and be like, what? Oh, okay, now I need to learn it by tomorrow. Ah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds right. I got into high school, and then I don't know what it was about high school teachers at my school, but they started doing more of the like gotcha directions.
The worst.
2/3 through, and then the last line is like, but if you read all the directions all the way through, just do the first question and then turn it in. All that sort of bullshit. And of course, I never read the directions.
Yep. There was a meme on Twitter the other day that was the, like, it was, like, something people with ADHD had all these things that were, like, characteristics, and then the last line was, like, you read this part first, didn't you? And I was like, oh, no, I did read that part first. And I handed it to my partner to read it because it was cracking me up, and bless him, he read the whole thing in order and got to the end and was like, I don't get it. And I was like, that's the point. You read it the way you were supposed to, and I totally skipped to the end. But yeah, I had to teach them to throw erasers, which is great. Also, if you have ADHD and you're clumsy, when someone chucks an eraser at you to see if you're paying attention, because I either wasn't paying attention or I was paying attention, but I still can't catch. It was so mean. Don't do that, teachers. Don't throw erasers at your students.
What?
Yeah. That was his, like...
I'm sorry. Sometimes I hear stuff as a teacher, and I'm like, this is awful.
I mean, it wasn't, like, to my face. It was just, you know, like, No. Are you paying attention? So you would, like, chuck out those little, you know, pink erasers, and I never caught it, ever. Never in my life. That's a weird place to stop, but...
Yeah, I never had anyone throw an eraser, but we did have a math teacher at our school who would, like, eat the chalk. Like, she would, like, you know how, like, dear. You chew on the end of your pen when you're thinking? She would do this with chalk on the board.
Oh, no.
And we're, like, watching her, like, there's chalk in your mouth.
That is, I'm sorry. Shivers down my spine. Ooh. Like fingernails on a chalkboard with a lot of chalk in your teeth.
I'm sorry.
And now any listener under the age of 25 is like, chalk? Why was there chalk?
Right. In the classroom.
I'm sorry, indoors? This person would chew on chalk?
Yeah. It was unusual.
I think it's a textural based thing with me. I cannot pull cotton out of pill bottles.
Yeah, no,
like I have things like this. Really? Cotton out of pill bottles can't do that.
I see that.
I don't even like writing with chalk.
No.
I had to write on a chalkboard recently, and I was like, "This is the worst experience."
Ooh,
of my
and
life.
I'm gonna
I
send you
so
some of those
much.
Chalk markers. Have you ever seen those?
No,
they're not chalk.
Oh,
they're
okay, good.
It's basically like they dissolve the chalk in water, so you're just writing with a marker, but it stays chalky.
Oh, thank God.
All right, Christmas gift for Anna. I'm writing that one down right now because otherwise I will forget.
I don't
forget.
Know what I like. It was for a friend's wedding, and they were like, "Yeah, just write this on this chalkboard." And it was the like moment in a movie where it was like, "Duh, duh, duh."
You're like, I can't do this,
but okay. So the concept of someone being like, "I get it. You're thinking."
No.
I know,
she's been doing it for so long, she was just like numb to the reality of what she was doing anymore. It was like, we had so
it
many
feels like a
like
metaphor
in
for teaching in general.
Like, I don't know what alternate reality I went to high school in, because like my husband had so many teachers who like loved him and wanted to see their students succeed, and I'm like, that's a normal teacher, right? But like, it's just like not the experience I had. I don't know what was going on.
No.
Like, okay, I don't know when you got diagnosed or what sort of teacher experiences you had, but one that was vivid for me was another math teacher at the same school. I had just gotten diagnosed, so I had my section 508 or whatever it was that like gives you the rights. And they're like, you should just have a second textbook to have at home. I was like, that's
oh
a great
my
idea,
gosh, that's
then
brilliant.
You don't forget it.
Yeah.
So I took this thing to my teacher and was like, I just need another textbook. And she was like, no. And it became this huge battle. I never got my textbook. She was like,
so
you just
ridiculous.
Play too many sports. You don't have a problem. And like, holding my rights from me. It was so bizarre.
What?
It
people
was so
are
bizarre.
Wild.
I was like, at the time, it felt like this whole thing. In retrospect, like as an adult, I've looked back on that. And like, she literally just would not give me a textbook.
Yeah, that's not cool.
What?
Well, I highly recommend having multiple copies of books, but I recommend it because I always forget and pre-order multiple copies of books, so we're just going to act like I do it because it's so I don't lose them. So I have one to take with me when I go out of the house and one to leave in the house and one to lend to friends. And totally intentional. Very intentional. Absolutely. Yeah, be my friend, authors, because I will accidentally order three of your books. It happens a lot. It really does happen a lot. That's why I do giveaways. Because I'm like, whoops, three of these books.
Yeah, right.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, yeah, right, we should let you go.
Yeah.
This has been great.
It has been great. EJ, can you remind us one more time of your book coming out in August and tell us the date? Tell us anything you want to tell us about it. Anything.
Sure. Thank you. So the book is Departures. It's a young adult dystopian novel about two sisters. I have not practiced this pitch yet.
We gave you the whole episode. No, I'm kidding.
You did, and I didn't even think ahead.
You were busy.
No. Thank you. I was. No, but it's about two sisters. The one, like this world, they schedule when you're going to die so that you don't go through all the pain of like whatever that process is going to be. So like they can track if you were going to get cancer or if you were going to have a heart problem, whatever, and then they just schedule. So that
it's
you
very
go
cool. It's a very cool
and
pitch.
So this, this girl, her date is when she's 17, and she wakes up the next morning. It didn't happen, and so she gets kind of like funneled out by this rebel group. Meanwhile, her sister is on the inside, kind of has a sense from some hints that are dropped that something went wrong, and so it kind of follows them both as they, from their different sides, peel away the layers of what's really going on below the surface with this dystopian government.
Wow. Yes,
I really liked what I've read. So,
thank you. August 10th is when it's coming out.
Very cool.
And yes, I'll be shouting about it right and left. So,
yeah.
Stay tuned.
Excellent. And we'll put all of your contact information in the show notes so that people can find you. And make sure to link that on Twitter. Yay! That's exciting. Well, we've made you pitch a lot of things, so you don't have to do the pitch your book badly thing.
I've already done plenty of bad pitching.
No, you did great. No. We've talked to us a lot about how pitching is just such an unnatural thing to do because it's like you're switching from being conversational to suddenly, like, I always feel like I should, like, put on the movie announcer voice, you know,
the second
when someone's like pitch your book, I'm just like, I'm either like, oh well, that's a girl and then a boy and that's a magic, or I feel like I need to be like, once upon a time there was this thing, because it's just, we don't speak like that. We don't like pitch the finger stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's so dumb. Yes, but it sounds amazing. Yeah. I think people are going to love it. I think there's a really hungry audience for more dystopian these days. You know, publishing takes a little while to catch up sometimes when it comes to like which trends they think are coming, but like I feel it in the air.
Well, and you know, I think to get political for just a moment, you know, with Trump in office the last 4 years, no one has wanted to start right when he hit office and right after he was elected, like 1984 and Handmaid's Tale and all that, like surged up to the top of the charts. But then once he was in office, I feel like things were so threatening and so close.
Where suddenly like rom-coms became huge.
Be philosophical about it. Right, because we were too close to living it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not that things are solved by any means just because there's been administration change, but I feel like we're at a point where we can, think about it a little bit more and get out of a panic mode.
I completely agree.
I'm feeling optimistic about it. And, you know, I love dystopian.
So I hope,
you know, this is not just me and my little lone book. But,
it's not.
Lots of more things coming back because I think it's great.
Like I said, I think, you know, I think audiences go through phases, like you said, because of various things. So what's going on in the world, you know, like if it's probably a really hard year right now or last year to sell a plague book, but, you know, in a year or so when people are processing stuff, they might really love that, you know.
Right.
But I think, you know, especially in like traditional publishing, the cycle takes it, – it's just so slow moving that by the time it's like – the audience starts expressing interest in something, it's going to take another few years sometimes for those books to hit shelves. So it's just like you can't necessarily track what readers want based on what is hitting the shelves now because that was a prediction made, you know, a while ago.
Right.
So, yeah, I think people are going to love it.
And I don't know if this audio is ever going to get, like, cut, but if anybody hears it, there's a sweet pupper in the background. And I've been making faces at this sweet pupper. We love sweet puppers.
Let me tell you, this dog is not so sweet.
Not a good boy.
It looks very cute and I love seeing it sit behind me.
She's just the worst. I love her. She's the worst.
Wait, we almost started the episode with Anna metaphorically telling someone to get out, and now we're going to end it with saying a dog's the worst. Our most controversial episode yet.
I do like an unlikable character. Gonna be the one. So here I am living my truth.
I love it so much. It's okay. We're gonna end this episode. Sweet peppers. I love you. Everyone, thanks again for listening to another episode of Basic Pitches. We super appreciate it. Remember that you can get EJ Winstrom's new book, Departures, a Dystopian, YA Dystopian, August 10th, 2021. I'm super excited about it, and you should be too. It sounds really great from what we've heard on this podcast. Remember to also support another podcasting friend, EJ and Emma C. Wells, with their podcast, Fantasy Girls Podcast. I listened to an episode, the episode we actually talked about here, and it was fantastic. It was a very great fun time. Also, remember that you need to add Emily Theed's, well, you don't need to, but I guess you should, but you should add Emily Theed's This Vicious Grace. It is the last Fenestra book. It has changed titles. This Vicious Grace, you can add it on Goodreads. And last but not least, as always, if you liked what you heard, you think it's a good podcast, you want to tell your friends about it, tell your friends about it. Like, subscribe, rate us on iTunes, shout about it on Twitter, send it through a pigeon message. I don't know. Tell people about this podcast. And we appreciate you. And we'll see you next week. Bye, pitches.